This is Remote Ruby.
Have you any remote idea to the meaning of the word?
Welcome back, Andrew.
Welcome back, Chris. How goes it? I guess it is welcome back for me because last week I was not with it.
Yeah, it's been a long week. We've had some, I don't know, it feels like winter's coming. And then yesterday it was like, it went from being rainy and cold to like 80s. Mm-hmm. And I was like, hey, summer again. And now it's back to cold and rainy. And so I don't know what to feel right now, but I just want to be indoors on the couch under a blanket watching TV and not coding, which is like the times where working from home is a little bit harder than usual, you know?
So. Yeah, it's still warm here. I mean, but I'm on the coast and my roommate today was like, man, it's so hot. It's probably 85 out here. And I was sitting out there and I was like, you know, I think it's a solid 79. It was exactly 79 degrees.
You just got that perfect temperature gauge.
Yeah, I know the feeling because I desperately hide from the cold. So we're not there yet.
Yeah. Jason's out this week. He was helping us get our Zoom call started before we started recording. But sounds like he had a busy week going on. After all of our discussions about Webpacker and Rails engines last week, I decided to go down that rabbit hole since it was on my to-do list. And it is rough. Remember that doc we were talking about, the Rails engines doc for Webpacker? That doc is, from what it appears, it's written where it assumes that your Rails engines are in the same repo. So it's not an engine that comes from a gem. It's like an engine, you know, like Shopify would organize their app as like one repo with engines inside of the directory. And so they configure the engine's Webpacker instance to set the root path where that ends up outputting the files to your main Rails app's public folder, which is cool and all, and then looks for the configs inside the engine, which is good, but that really doesn't work for gems distributed on Ruby gems, because you actually need the root to, or the output root to be your Rails root. And then there was something in there where you can, for example, they have it with two options at the very end of this. Once you get it compiling, which takes a little while to figure out the configs and stuff, then you can go and either compile your assets into the Rails apps public folder, and then you might put it in like madmin-packs and throw all the files in there and include those. But then there was some conflict there where, you know, like the final output path of that is one thing, and I need to actually access other things from the root path. So there, it seems like some of the configuration things in Webpacker could be more customizable or like overridable to make that a little bit more flexible. Because the other option was, I was compiling it first and it was compiling into like, well, their examples are using like ../ public, and it like just goes up in a directory on my computer, you know? And then I realized, oh, that's, it expects that the gem is inside the Rails app, you know, folder too. So yeah, then the other thing is you can either put it in your public packs folder, or you can insert a rack static middleware to serve up files from a directory, which I didn't really want to do. And then there's a whole other rabbit hole of that I got into where it was like, well, I got everything compiling, but how do I make it so you can customize it? So I don't even know if I'm going to go down this route of the engine docs at all. What I might end up doing is, when you install Madmin, add our packages to your package JSON, and then just add another madmin.js pack to your Rails app. So you can go customize it and replace Tailwind or whatever you want. Some of the downsides there are like, if your Rails app's already configured for Tailwind, we're going to be using that same config. So if you customized it then and removed some color or something that we use in Madmin, then that's potentially a problem. So it is a complicated beast. Seems like some of those things are solvable by just making the config a little bit more flexible. But yeah, it was a definitely a multi-day rabbit hole of what the heck is going on.
I love a good rabbit hole, dude. I would now name a rabbit as my spirit animal if asked in the future. We both love the holes.
Yeah, you're going to get a pet rabbit named Webpacker.
No, rabbits smell, dude.
It'll leave lots of presents on the floor.
Yeah, gross. That sounds fun and slash or terrible, but that's interesting that you got to the place that you're at. So is there anything in the Webpacker docs that you kind of were like, oh, maybe I should add this? Or did you kind of covered it?
The big thing was like that whole, you know, the assumption that the engine docs are with an engine inside of your main repo. That seems like something that either needs to be changed completely so it could be just any gem. Because there was a lot of those things where like using a relative path doesn't make sense. You want to use engine.root or rails.root to pick the exact directory you want, not a relative path. That was the big thing. I think that I went through that for a couple hours and I was like, why is it compiling in these weird spots? Or it tells me it compiles in one directory and then it like doesn't actually put any files there. And it was like really confusing to figure out some of that stuff. So I may go and make a PR for that, but I also might make a generic PR or something to maybe automate some of this stuff or, you know, reorganize some of it or something. I'm not entirely sure. I mean, there's steps in here. They're like, go create a Rails app with Webpacker and then copy the bin Webpack and bin Webpack dev server to your gem and the package JSON to your gem and stuff. And I was like, that, I don't know about that. That's okay. But it seems like we should be able to add that to the, you know, Rails plugin new or whatever, that generator and hook into that or something. So it seems like it could use a lot of love and I don't think it would be too hard to do it. I just don't think anyone's really done it. But then there's like all those decisions of like, okay, if you're building Stimulus Reflex, you have a situation there where you don't want to edit that JavaScript, right? You want that to stay as is and that's good. So that makes sense. And that solution of we'll just compile it as a node module and publish it on NPM works great because it's not something that you want to ever change. Madmin, on the other hand, is something where you may want to add graphing JavaScript and CSS to like display graphs. And the problem that I ran into with that was you can't do it if it's all compiled in the engine. And then also the helpers. Those reference the engine's Webpacker instance. And the instance controls the directories and stuff. So anytime you do a JavaScript pack tag, you can use that helper, which will look at the instance, which we tell it, hey, in these views, use the Webpacker engine instance, which means we couldn't reference the main applications ones very easily, from what I can tell. And that's a problem. So we wouldn't be able to make the Madmin layout easily extendable by adding your own JavaScript pack tags. So that wasn't going to work. So I don't know. It seems like the solution for that is really just use another parent JavaScript pack tag in the main Rails app and just like in the install, go and copy it over. Seems like the only solution. Downside is you got to have all those dependencies to the main app's application JSON. So, but it's fine because if your main app pack tag doesn't include Bootstrap or whatever, but your engine does, it's not going to compile Bootstrap into the main application one because you never imported it. So that'll be okay. Yeah, I don't know. It just seems a little like convoluted.
Have you thought about just taking like a really minimal CSS framework that's 2 kilobytes or something and using that over Tailwind?
Yeah. I mean, part of it is it's an admin, so I want you to be able to tailor it and like add custom stuff to it. So, you know, definitely thought about doing that, but extending what we have out of the box is like just a natural thing. So I want the flexibility there. And like with Purge CSS and Tailwind, whatever, you know, it's going to be tiny when it compiles. So, you know, I don't think that's too bad. I probably will consider, you know, building my own minimal, like maybe I'll go and use Tailwind in development and then pull out all the stuff we use and just throw that in as a CSS file or something and keep it simple. But I don't know. It's gnarly.
Yeah, I would probably be leaning towards what you were just saying, where you build Madden the way you want. And then at the very end, you compile it and then you take the version that is all purged and stuff. And then maybe you can minify that even more with something and gzip it and then just put that on an NPM package and be like, hey, if you want the styles, they're here. And if you don't want them, it's just going to be plain HTML and that's what we got.
Yeah. Something like that might be good. I think that would work fairly well. And you could just like, I mean, honestly, you could just throw a link to unpackage and then kind of just include the latest from a CDN in that sense. And we could do that. And then if you want to replace it, you can add your own pack tag or something. And, you know, it makes sense to go that route where we have like, this is our official version and you can use that and extend it, or you can get rid of it and, you know, start from scratch. But I'm definitely leaning towards we will probably add a pack tag during the install and dependencies and maybe make a few tweaks. I would definitely lean towards not using Tailwind. Or maybe it's just a thing that we decide we'll use Tailwind and that's just part of the deal. Yeah, you know, I mean, it's going to be fully separate JavaScript and style sheets at the end of the day for the admin area. So I'm not really too worried about those conflicting with the main app or anything. We'll try and make sure that TurboLinks is in there, Rails, UJS, that sort of thing. So it would make sense if we had just a very standard pack at the end of the day. So yeah. Honestly, we'll probably go that route, I would bet, just for now. And maybe that'll change in the future. But it seems like a decent solution. And we can still do as much as we want, include a JavaScript select library and whatever to make that stuff easier. Because one of the things that I absolutely want out of the box is when you have a post belongs to a user, that user select should never ever out of the box load every single user out of the database. And a lot of the admins default to like user.all. And then it takes forever in production where you're like, we don't need to load 100,000 users out of the database to render the select box. Come on, guys. I want to have some library there that's like slim select, something small that we can just do an Ajax request and, you know, load stuff by a fuzzy search or something pretty quick. I think that would be good.
Yeah. Well, as someone who is intending to consume this, I think adding a pack tag is perfectly reasonable and it wouldn't bother me at all.
Cool. Yeah. I think that's the way to go because then we can use stuff. And I feel like this is like the philosophy I took on Jumpstart Pro as well and whatever, which is, look, at the end of the day, we're building a library that I want you to change. I don't want to require too much to be in a certain way. I want it to be modifiable and stuff. So if we just dump a template or whatever the base, you know, pack JavaScript stuff right into your Rails app, you know exactly where it is. You can go change it. If you ever need to update that, we'll have a Rails generator that will go override that file with the latest, you know, any changes we've made. And we can build something like we did in Stimulus Reflex that's, hey, your JavaScript's out of date. You should update that. We can probably come up with a solution for that'll work. It'll be simple enough, but, you know, that I think is probably the way to go. Just to give you something that's, you know, what I love about like Devise, you can use Devise with no views, but if you want to install the views, you run Rails Devise or generate Devise views and blah, blah, customize them to your heart's content. And it's nice that it gets out of the way, but you can also change it as much as you need, which you usually want to change it. So, you know, I want kind of that experience or that flow for developing.
How long until you think the folks are going to be able to see Madman?
It's kind of last couple weeks. I haven't done much on it. I mean, I guess I did a fair bit this week on Webpacker stuff, but I think it's still probably over half finished, but there's lots of like the last nuances that I got to figure out. The Ajax search endpoint and stuff for a belongs to and has ones and whatever. Last time I used it, I think I ran it on a real application of mine, like Jumpstart Pro or something, and it had to generate all the models and stuff, and it was working pretty well. So if I can get through the rest of some of the more complicated field types, like has many and that sort of thing, once those are done, I think the majority of that will be functional. So hopefully soon, maybe in the next week or two, I will have like a fairly functional version that can do more than just your text, your strings, your integers, your whatever fields. Some of them get to be complicated. What do you do with the JSON field? You know, it's probably just the text area, and that's about as good as you can make it. But we do have, if you install Action Mailbox,
Action Active Mailbox, yeah.
I always forget that one. You know, if you have models for that or Action Text and any of those, Active Storage, all of those are pretty awesome because I'll go like deduplicate stuff because we'll pull in all of the fields, the columns in the database, but then I'll remove, for example, with a belongs to, you'll have the association, but you'll also have the, you know, post user ID. So we don't want user ID and user in there. We really just want user. So I go and deduplicate that. So I'll enumerate all of your associations and the attributes and then go back and say, look, this is rich text, so we can delete this association. We don't need that. And, you know, it can go clean it up so that it is more what you would actually interact with in your forms and stuff. So that's all working pretty well. I have some fairly complicated strong params generation from that. And it's like, you know, all pretty similar to the way that Administrate works for that too. Because I like their approach quite a bit, but they don't have support for any nested models, for example, which was like very strange to me. So that was one thing that we support out of the box. Eventually, I'm sure they'll support it, but we'll have that right away. And yeah, I'll have to dive back into it and see what was the last pieces, but it's so meta when you're writing the code. So if you have a class like user, it's an active record model. Have you ever called user.modelname?
I have actually, but for something very meta.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's really only used for meta stuff like that.
Meta time with Chris Oliver.
Yeah, it's like one of my favorite things that I, you know, when I first discovered that, I was like, oh my God, this is the coolest thing. This is how it generates the file paths, the route names, and all those things, the namespaces and whatever. That was one of my favorite things where I was like, this explains so much of how Rails works. Such a cool thing. And I don't use it very often, but that's like a core piece of this admin because you don't really have any idea of what name of class that you're working with. You're just like, well, what is the model name and what's the plural version of it? And we'll generate a, you know, a plural version of that _controller.rb. And, you know, use that for quite a few different things. So if anybody's not seen that, look up model name. And I don't know if it's active model. It probably is an active model thing. Like it's not an active record feature. It's just kind of generic to all models, whether or not they are database backed or not. So it is a cool feature of Rails.
I was expecting you to say something more like Christmas, Thanksgiving, but 2 weeks, damn. So good luck on that. Because that means by the time this podcast drops, there may be
That's true.
TM something out there.
Yeah, it's true. If I don't go down the rabbit hole of Webpacker further, which I don't think I will, yeah, it shouldn't take too much longer to get a basic version up. You know, there's a few things that I've done that I'm not sure that I love. For example, one of the things that always irked me as a little strange about Administrate was they generate the nav bar on the side based upon your routes, which I thought was strange. And when I built Madmin, what I did was I went and we keep track of every time you inherit from Madmin will keep track of all of those in an array and then use that to generate the sidebar, right? So every time you define a Madmin resource, it'll then add to that array. And then when we render the navbar, we have this array of all these objects that we can render, you know, and link to the post dashboard in your admin. But that is tricky because of auto-loading, because not everything has been loaded. So the navbar is empty sometimes. So you have to force eager loading, which isn't necessarily something I want to do in the admin, but it'll be something that's done in production. So, and you're not using your admin area that often in development. So, you know, the routes thing, I guess, makes sense as a solution. And it doesn't force you to deal with eager loading, but it also seemed kind of strange because there are things that could be in your routes there that aren't, you know, resources that you want in your admin or whatever. So it seemed strange to me that, you know, that it uses that, but maybe it's okay. So I haven't fully decided on a few of those things, if I like the way that your loading approach works or not, or if the route approach works better. So those might be some things that delay if I realize like, oh, this is going to have a problem because of this or that, you know, and it is what it is. There's not like a, because of lazy loading, not a perfect solution for that either way. And I don't know how you would enumerate the list of all of the models in your app otherwise. You pretty much have to eager load it or cheat and use the routes and just say, this is all the stuff that's available, you know? So I don't know.
I went down an eager loading, auto loading, no loading, lazy loading path this week that I can't really talk about, but it's kind of complicated, especially at the end of the day when you get to that place where you're like, okay, well, this isn't working. And I really am not sure if it's because of auto loading or because there's a bug in my code, because it seems to work-ish, but the test fails and it's loading this twice and it's just, damn it.
Yeah, it is tricky. One of those things that I did in Madmin along those lines was I want to add a directory into your app, you know, and next to app controllers and helpers and models and stuff. And I want those to be in subfolders so you can put your field types in there and your resources. And I didn't want both of those to be at the parent level. So that was one where I was learning sort of the flags and the Rails path stuff, which I've never looked into before because I generally don't modify the Rails paths and eager loading and auto loading flags for those. That was kind of interesting. It is definitely something that gives me a huge respect for Xavier for working on Zeitwerk and everything. He's done a killer job with all that. It is awesome.
Yeah, for sure. By the way, do you know if GoRails is online?
Yeah.
And you know that because Honey Badger has uptime monitoring checks, right?
Yes.
Yes. So people out there, folks, every week we're going to do this until all of you try Honey Badger, mention the podcast, get uptime monitoring so that you don't have to wonder. You know how fast Chris just said, yes, I know my site is up. And that's because he has Honey Badger back there giving him uptime monitoring checks.
Yeah. I was just talking to a guy this morning about he's got an app that's built on Jumpstart Pro that is going to go from 200 customers to like, he's going to add another 1,500 here in the next week or two. And we were having a call because he was like, I, you know, this is like a huge amount to scale up. And we're discussing, you know, how do you go from the app that one person's developing to something that's like more of a production environment that has uptime monitoring and stuff? Because he was like, I accidentally took the site down the other day for an hour or two. And none of the businesses noticed or complained, but I'm sure that some of the customers on the site weren't able to check out or whatever. And I was like, yeah, you need to go set up, you know, some stuff to monitor that and, you know, have your health checks. And, you know, if you got background jobs doing work, have them report to Honey Badger so you can know for sure that they're checking in. Cause that is one of the things that you can get by with for quite a while. Just flying by the seat of your pants. But at a certain point, you need to know that it's working. And yeah, it saves you a lot of stress just being able to like relax. Yeah.
Yes. So check in Honey Badger to your app so that you can check out. I want money for that.
Yeah, there you go. You can make that into a Honey Badger t-shirt.
Dude, the Honey Badger t-shirts are so sick. They're I have awesome. Two of them and it's the dopest like tech shirts I have, hands down. That's not even like a plug. I mean, they're not paying us to say that. That is 100%. I have a sticker from them that's also like the dopest tech sticker I've ever gotten. And dude, it's hands down awesome.
There's I guess this is back in like May when we were cleaning our house to move out because we were selling it. I found Honey Badger sticker from like 2011 or something when I went to Ruby Midwest in Kansas City or something like that. And it was like old Honey Badger swag. It was so awesome. I was like, this is sweet. So I remember I tweeted a picture of that when I found it. I don't remember a whole lot about what the community was like back then. I just remember it being exciting because I was like, there's these awesome people building cool stuff and I get to hang out with them. Because in college at my senior year, some kid in class came up to me and was like, dude, did you build your website yourself? And I was like, we're in computer science. What do you mean? Who would have built it for me? What are you talking about? That's why we're here.
Oh, it hurts because it's true.
It is.
Do you want to feel old for a second? 2011, I was a freshman in high school.
Yeah.
I was so full of optimism. God, what happened?
I saw somebody that was talking about the new Borat movie and was like, it's been 14 years since Borat 1 came out. And I was like, oh my God.
I didn't really understand, I guess, when I saw Borat 1, like the nuance behind the comedy. I think if I rewatched, it would be a lot funnier. But this Borat 2, I am going to watch that.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I remember it like hit us at the right time when it came out the first time. The first one came out. But I can't believe it's been 14 years. It's crazy. Time's flying.
Yeah, it is. Speaking of time flying and stuff, dude, I realized this week that, dude, I am just so completely, utterly burnt out. Just like sputtering to the finish line. Just done. So next week, I am taking most of the week off and I'm going to try to, I don't know, self-care, self-help, something. Self-something.
Yeah. What's your plans? Because this is something that like, oh man, it creeps up on you. I feel like
it does.
You know, like you don't pay attention to it. You can feel it happening. You're like slowing down or whatever. And then there's like a tipping point where you're like, I just can't anymore. Mm-hmm. And I get that way all the time. And part of that for me is just, I don't have backup. It's just me. So right. I've got to be there every day, which with no breaks on weekends and stuff, doing support or whatever is just super exhausting. But yeah, I was curious, you know, what's your plans to rejuvenate and get back into enjoying stuff again?
Yeah. So I have this written down somewhere, but I can't get to it like quickly enough. But there's like a paper that defined burnout. That's like kind of the main source, I guess, of where they clinically defined burnout. And one of the aspects of burnout is like emotional burnout, where you start to realize you really can't care about anything. And like, you're just emotionally depleted. And there's just like, you stop caring about anything. You stop caring about other people. You stop caring about everything. So that's like the first aspect of where I was like, yeah, I have completely lost every like ounce of like emotion. And that is completely to the fault of the news and my consumption of it. Because yeah, there's just so much that I like care about happening that it's like, oh my God, there's just so much happening, especially a few months ago in the summer when I was like, okay, I really care about this. I want this to change and I want to go out and do something about this. I want to go protest. And during that time, I was expending a lot more emotional energy than I kind of realized because I'm not a very emotional person. So when I do expend it, it can go quickly. So my plans to rejuvenate are, number one, there are a few things in my life that are causing me stress internally that I'm not thinking about a lot. Number one, it's the fact that my room is literally like a really bad tornado has come through and just destroyed it. So I have to clean up my room, dude. My room is a disaster. An old roommate always used to joke that you can always tell Andrew's state of mind by the state of his room. And my room right now is a freaking nightmare. you can't even comprehend probably. Not good.
I can relate to that. There are so many times where I'm like, I've had this little thing I've needed to do, you know, like just file a paper away or something, some bill or something that I need to keep. And it just sits on my desk for, you know, months. Eons. And I'm like, I just need to put it literally 10 foot over there in the right folder. And I haven't done it, you know? And that sucks. But then it's also wonderful when I go through and I'm like, I'm going to go clean all the stuff up. And then I've always felt like I want where I work to be like the biggest desk with the least amount of stuff on it. Cause it feels like that helps my brain also feel that way, where I'm like, it's just open and clear in here, you know? But then when my brain gets messier, my desk gets messier.
Oh yeah.
You know? It's like a one-to-one thing. It's strange. Like right now I have a disassembled broken keyboard. Is that your new keyboard?
Yeah. For the listeners, I'm showing Chris my desk, which is literally no ounce of free space. And I cleaned this up like the other day. So yes, the cleanliness of my workspace, the cleanliness of my room. I don't want to speak about the state of my bathroom because that's just embarrassing. I know we have people listening who would just come literally murder me if they saw what was in there. That's got to get cleaned up. So number one is I need to clean some stuff up because it's cluttering my brain. Number two is I'm going to go get a massage. That's number two. I really want to do that. And my body is just like tense and crackly and full of goo. I think that's what bodies are made of.
Big old bag of meat.
Yeah, I'm just a big old bag of meat. I just need to get a massage, I think.
That helps a lot.
It will, because I walked up the stairs the other day and I was like, what the frick is all that cracking? I was like, this is not good.
It's not good that you're like, I mean, I kind of hunch over the computer sometimes and like, it is just not I have a standing desk, but I don't stand enough. Mm-hmm. I need to stand way more, but you know, there are times where my brain will like function way better standing up and coding. But then there are also times where I'm like, it's distracting me that I'm standing and I'm like moving around so much, and I'll sit down and then just be there for the next 6 hours sitting and coding. But yeah, it's not a great thing that we're at our desk all day, every day.
No, it's not. Number three, I think I'm on three. I have absolutely no goals in life. No plans, no goals, no aspirations, because I feel like I did when I was younger, but I achieved all of those. My goal was to become a programmer, to get employed. My biggest goal that I had since high school is that 2 years after college, I wanted to be making $100,000. And I did that. And then after I did that, which was like one of the biggest goals I had, I'm like, oh, I don't really have any more goals. I don't know what I want to do with my life. I don't know where I want to go. I have no dreams. So I think that's so because I have none of that, I have nothing like to look forward to when I wake up in the morning. So like I'm a perpetual snoozer because of that. And that kind of leads to number four, which is I have to fix my sleep schedule, because that is definitely number one, the thing that is ruining me right now. It's out of control.
Going back to number three, I heard somebody describe that as astronaut syndrome, which I love. Like the concept is just you've spent your entire life training to be an astronaut and you finally go up into space. And then when you come back, you're done. You accomplished your goals. That's it. You didn't have anything more than that. You wanted to go to space and you did it. And now what? You have the rest of your life, but what do you want to do? And I thought that was like a really good description of it. So now anytime I hear somebody talk about that, I'm like, astronaut syndrome. It's just a perfect term for it. But yeah, I feel that way definitely as well. You know, I have a lot of projects that I'm working on, but I don't have a 5 or 10 year goal or anything. I'm just like, I'm going to keep improving everything that I'm doing and maybe build a few new things that I want to see exist. And that's it. There's not like a grand plan to, you know, hire people for less than minimum wage and avoid taxes and, you know, become big like Amazon and whatever. You know, like it's just, I don't know. It's weird because everybody talks about having goals and everything. And I'm like, I don't know, you know? And then so many times when people pick a goal, it's not actually what they want, you know? Like,
right.
If you want to be a millionaire, you'll end up being a millionaire with a bunch of responsibilities and you're not happy. You're like, right. That wasn't the essence of what I dreamed of when I said I want to be a millionaire. And that is a strange thing. But at the end of the day, too, you have to have something you're working towards. What do you care about that you want to make better in the world?
Right.
That's important.
Yeah.
And I guess that comes down to like how you set your goals is important. You know, you can't just say, I need $1 million. You have to have some purpose, you know, that lacks purpose. And if you're like, I want to make Rails or Ruby the best programming environment for, you know, this type of person, that's something you can do all day. And that's inspiring and can give you a million ideas of, you know, what to go build. But yeah, goals are a tough thing.
They are.
Are you going to take time off to just like, almost meditate or something and think about what you want to do with your life and who you want to help and what you want to build?
Yeah. I mean, basically, because when I was younger, and I think I can say this, like I would literally just go on top of a mountain and trip acid all day and figure out what I wanted to do. And that was like, you know, say what you will about my methods, it was effective. So once I said, again, when I was younger, I knew exactly what I wanted. Now I don't. And need to figure that out. To your point, I've got this app called Blinkist, Blinkist, where it's like kind of the SparkNotes audio version of books. And I've kind of gotten really into that recently. And they talk a lot about, there's several books on setting goals and how to set your goals effectively. And, you know, there's books on burnout and there's books on, you know, financial management. Yeah. So I've been getting into stuff like that. And yes, I am going to figure out some goals and kind of like into three categories of what I want to accomplish in like the next week, the next year, the next month, the next 10 months, the next 5 years, 10 years. What's my big goal? What's my BHAG, my big, hairy, audacious goal? I was listening to a book about something and they were like, if you don't have goals, like you wake up in the morning and you just keep hitting snooze because there's literally nothing in your life to make you want to get out of bed. And I was like, yeah, there's literally nothing that makes you want to get out of the bed in the morning. And so I do. I snooze for hours.
Yeah, I've had a few rough mornings like that where I'm like, I know that the second I open my email, I'm just my like mental space is going to go in the wrong direction and I'll be dealing with support questions or whatever. And I just want to go like build stuff. I don't want to do support. And so I'll lay in bed for as long as possible to like, you know, skip that. Or delay it for as long as I can. And, you know, there are those times where you have something that you're working towards that you're just like, I can barely sleep. You can't fall asleep because you're like, what am I going to work on tomorrow? And you're like trying to figure that out. And those days are wonderful. They're like really fun. And that's the thing too, is I guess those days are short. You have them for a while and things are inevitably going to change. Just like any project, when you get into the weeds, you're like, oh, this is harder than I expected. And you don't necessarily wake up as excited anymore. But I feel like part of burnout too is you have to get out of it and dig yourself out of it. But you also have to try and figure out, can I set up checks and balances so that I can catch myself before I fall into the deep end of the pool and start panicking again? You know, you have any thoughts on, you know, what you are going to do for that to keep yourself in hopefully balance longer term?
Yes, the long term, the thing I literally was just talking about, I have no concept of. Accountability, I guess, would be the thing I would say off the bat. Number one, my relationship with people is weird because I am very good with people when I want to be, but I don't like most people. I'm not like a very easy to get along with person generally because I'm very outspoken. And because of that, you know, my friend amounts have changed over the years, especially after college where I had a ton of friends in college and then everyone started moving away. And then I started working from home because I made new friends at work, but then I started working from home. And I wouldn't say I'm isolated because I have roommates, which I get along with and we play video games and stuff like that. So that's not an issue, but I'm planning to move out at some point. So I think keeping myself in a place where, like, this podcast is a good example. I like doing this podcast because I like hanging out with you and Jason, and I'm not isolating myself. After a remote Ruby call, I feel good. I'm like happy. I'm like, yeah, I got to hang out with Jason and Chris. We got to talk about cool nerd stuff that I like to talk about with people. And so just finding a way to continue doing that, I think virtual meetups may be a way. And also just like telling people, like, and this is not something I really talk about because it's kind of personal, but I don't have a great relationship with anyone in my family. Like, my parents and I aren't very close. I'm not close with either of my brothers. And to no fault of them, really, it's like my fault. I just like at some point got annoyed and, you know, I moved as far away possible as I could, but still be in the in-state tuition zone. So I need to rekindle some relationships that I've lost, because I think at some point, whether they did it intrinsically or not, my parents taught me that success was really the most important thing to work for. And for me, success was only attainable. And I remember explicitly having this thought. I was dating this girl and we were like going very strong, but something that she didn't want me doing is like at night, I wanted to go program. I'm saying this out loud. It's God, dude, come on, seriously. But it's true. Like at night, I wanted to go program and she was like, no, lay in bed and watch TV. And it started to like, I don't know how this like toxic thought got into my brain, but it was like, she's holding you back, because that's kind of something my parents, not like I said, not explicitly taught me, but like almost intrinsically, is that success is the most important thing. And that the only way I was going to get success is I had to stop seeing her, because she was holding me back and preventing me from programming at night when I wanted to program, which is definitely what I should not have been doing, because that's how my sleep schedule got all screwy. But I need to rekindle some of those relationships with people that I've let go of. So, but by doing that, I'm hoping to create kind of a system of support and accountability. I have no support system at all. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. No one knows what's going on with me really at all. And like I said, because I'm not close to my family and my friends, I'm good friends with you and Jason, but I'm not just going to call you guys in the middle of the night and be like, dude, I'm blah, 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 blah. You know, like I know you can. And I hope you guys know you could as well, but I need like a different type of support system. That's not, I don't know.
Ruby developers.
I feel in my brain that I need to have a support system and I don't have one because I'm not good at opening up. And probably something that is, kind of leads into my last thing, that is I'm probably due to go back to therapy for a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, the pandemic definitely doesn't help the connection with people. And I did the same. Oh man, I had a lot of similarities there where like, when I was in school and stuff, I was just like coding all night and, you know, building random stuff and whatever. And I was like, not really dating because I don't even know what I'm doing with my life. I can't even begin to think about that. I'm trying to figure out what kind of a career I'm going to have, period, or whatever. I don't know what I want to do. So I was like, I don't want to get into a serious relationship and not, you know, I want to have the freedom to go move to New York City on a whim because I want to go do that or whatever. And so I ended up, you know, doing that and moving to New York City for a year for a job, which was like wonderful. But then like I lost all the people who I knew in the community here in St. Louis because I was going to meetups and I knew all these people and hung out with them every week at random like Ruby meetups or startup meetups and stuff. Then like going to New York City and not knowing a single person and just, I don't have a car. I don't know how to go to Target and buy like furniture and bring it home because it's just, you know, I don't have a car and I can't drag it onto the train or whatever. It was just weird, you know, and a whole different little things that I took for granted were like difficult all of a sudden. And, you know, that was like a very, you know, lonely time I felt like, because you come home from work and you're like, I don't have anybody to go hang out with and stuff. And I did the same thing of, I'm going to go make sure that I start cultivating, you know, friendships and support group and, you know, people that help me get along. And that was good. And one of my friends, we would go regularly after work, go to the gym and go, you know, hang out and talk about startups and stuff. And, you know, for both of us, that was what we needed because we were figuring out what the heck we wanted to do with our lives and, you know, not just, you know, working or anything. We were like trying to eat well and lift and whatever. And it makes such a big difference. And then your like mind frees up a lot too, because you get caught in these like weird circles in your head thinking about the same thing all the time. Really, the good ideas and, you know, stuff come from you meet some random person who does something totally different that you've realized is like fascinating. You're like, I didn't realize real estate could be that interesting, you know? And then you start to find all these like similarities and stuff. And so like now I have some friends that every Thursday night, and this is really the only time I ever see them these days, because now they're married and they have kids and we have busy lives. But we still get together on Thursday nights and hang out on a patio at my friend's house by his pool. And we just talk about random stuff like philosophy and real estate and, you know, whatever comes up. And it is so nice to have that where we just, I don't have those conversations with anybody else. And that's, you know, all we really get together and do is just hang out and talk about those things. And it's kind of like this podcast. Like we just sit down and talk about whatever we feel like for a few hours. It's amazing. But you have to have that in more than just, you know, exactly. It can't always be work stuff. So,
yeah, it can't always be work stuff. I think that's kind of the key point. It's because for the majority of my career, like everything was about work and I cared about work so much. And I don't know why, because honestly, like at the end of the day, I'm definitely the type of person, screw the man. Like I, you know, like this and that, I don't think that way. But when it came down to it, my only purpose in life, they were derived from work-related goals. And now I'm like, I've accomplished a lot of my work-related goals. I'm obviously not, you know, exactly where I want to be in everything, but, you know, I've accomplished the specific ones I set. It's time to set new ones. It's time to, you know, think about the long term. And, you know, I'm not a kid anymore. And sometimes I like to forget that, you know, I'm not even 25 yet, but like still, it's like time to stop. I'm very immature in a lot of ways and it's kind of time to start thinking about some of that stuff. And I think if I sit down and literally just have like several days where I'm like, you know, what do I want in life? What do I want for this? Why do I want my room to be clean? The answer is absolutely yes. Cleaning up some of the clutter, getting some of that stuff that I, you know, don't do because I don't want to do it, and sending some emails and, you know, just taking a break. And you just need a break. I mean, I kind of had that break while I was job hunting, but that was not truly a break because it was like stress break.
Yeah. The only difference there was like, you're not doing the same type of work every day, but you're applying for jobs and worrying about that. And it's just, it's a different stress. It's just not, you need the time completely off. And, you know, I don't have that either. Like I need to, mostly because I don't have employees to like go take over responsibilities while I disappear for a month and in the mountains at a cabin or something, which would be amazing. But, you know, those are things you have to plan for and whatever. It's such an interesting thing. The running at full speed all the time, you just can't do. You like to think you do or forget that you're doing it while you're in it. And eventually your legs give out and you're like, uh-oh, this is not good.
Exactly. I had a manager one time and he took an interest in me because I think he saw some aspects of himself in me and he was like, dude, you're not a robot. It's okay to like, I think my grandmother had just died or something when he said that. And I was like, I'm just going to take a day off and then I'll be back. And then we'll get, you know, there was like something I was in the middle of doing. I was like, and then we'll get blah, 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 blah done. And he's like, dude, you're not a robot. It's okay to just care and just admit that like this like bothers you and just take some time. And no, I've always been full speed, all gas, no brakes. And yeah, the other day I was like, oh, I can't. I'm done. I can't do this anymore. It's not only is it, I know it's not sustainable in my brain, but like in practice, I'm just like, yeah, my feet gave out. There's no more gas.
Yeah.
I'm completely burnt.
Yeah. You just treat it. You almost want to default treat it as just another problem to fix where it's, well, I can't apply more effort to fix the problem. I actually have to apply less effort to work on it. Yeah. I can relate to a lot of that, man. It's not easy. And it's just, you know, your natural tendencies or whatever to do that. And it's a stressful time, especially with, like we were talking about going to Europe and, you know, just traveling a bit and we're not going to do that, but it would have been so nice, man, fun startup stories. The whole company, the startup I worked at, moved to Berlin for a whole month. Not everybody came because some people had kids and they came for like 2 weeks. Well, that was not a great use of money, of investors' money, but oh my God, was it nice to be able to be in a whole different country where I don't speak the language. And all I could think about when I was thinking about coming back home was like, it was like I'm playing a video game and I'm in the God view looking down and watching myself walk, you know, to the train to go to Manhattan, to go to the office, and then just go get dinner and get on the train and go back home and repeat. And I was like, that's such a sad existence. And I'm not coming back and doing that again. And it's so nice to be able to pull yourself that far out of your day-to-day to analyze it and see what you're doing and realize, yeah, that's not healthy. But if you're doing your day-to-day, you know, you just can't see it sometimes. Like it's right in front of you, but you don't realize it. So yeah, it'll be good if you can get, you know, a week off or whatever, at least that I feel like I could use a month off easily or whatever. It'd be nice to take a whole quarter off. But I know that's not happening. You know,
a virtual assistant.
Yeah. I mean, I need a virtual DevOps assistant and a virtual screencast assistant and lots of things. But, you know, if you can do anything that pulls you out of your regular thing that you can look back on your life and be like, huh, these little things I was doing were not good for me, you know, and look at them objectively and see, wow, I can do that better. It hopefully will help a lot.
Yeah. Which is kind of what my like drug story or the beginning of this conversation was about. The beginning to pull yourself completely away from everything and just being like, what's going on, dude? Like almost like looking at yourself and like, dude, what's going on here? It's not good. We need to talk about this.
Yeah. It's almost like you're looking at yourself as if you were looking at someone else's life. You know, like you can look at somebody else from the third party and be like, why are you doing that? Why are you eating McDonald's every morning or whatever? You know, like that's not healthy. But if you're doing that and you're like, that's just what I do. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to see it the same way for whatever reason. It's kind of funny that you can't see it the same way. But I think a lot of people do that, you know, go to Colorado and pick up some stuff and it helps give them perspective or whatever. But yeah,
exactly. I was going to move to Colorado. You read my mind.
There you go. That's still the place. Then go live with Andrew Famara and just make the Andrew house.
No.
We're going to get all the Andrews who do Ruby and put them in one house. And then we're going to film it and make a TV show out of it and put it on Netflix.
It would be not, no one outside of like developers would ever want to see that show. But like all the developers would be like, holy crap, they're going to kill each other. Their schema's wrong. They're going to murder each other.
He force pushed to his repo. Oh my God.
He force pushed to main. I've done that a lot.
Oh man. Speaking of main, that was tripping me up the other day. The change on GitHub, I was like, why is this not pushing to master? What is going on?
Yeah.
And I was like, oh yeah. And then I saw Laravel Forge had some, they added some error messages that were like, yeah, it looks like you tried to push master, but it's not master anymore. It's main. And
yeah,
it would be nice if there was actually, if there was some like auto rename or something in GitHub. So it would be seamless because they do the redirects and stuff when you rename a repo. It would be really nice if they, you know,
rewrote. This is Git, right? Like you want Git redirects. Dude, just create an alias.
I mean, they should do it for me is what I'm saying. I don't want to do the work. This is the thing. I don't want to do the work.
I love it. I agree with it. I love it. I will stamp it with approval. Yes. I made the change a while back. So at this point, I expected to go to main. Now I work on some repos that aren't. And I'm just like, now it trips me up trying to push to master.
Yeah.
So either way, that's why I just created GPM. Git GPM. Push main. And if it fails... Main. Can't you like git push head? Something like that? Because I know there's no way to get like the default branch out of git, which is annoying.
Oh, there's not?
I don't think so. Because if that was true, all you'd have to do is figure out a way to get to that command and then you just git push and then eval the default branch.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah. I don't think I've ever looked into default branch stuff.
Well, because its default branch is like GitHub kind of stuff.
Yeah, like, right.
But I don't know. It might just be branches.
Configuration option in your repo or whatever, which isn't necessarily going to be set by default and all that fun stuff. Yeah. It's programming. Everything is broken. Everything is awful.
Everything is fine. Everything is fine. Everything is fine. Nothing's on fire except half of California. All right. I think I'm good. Are you good?
Yeah, man. Well, go de-stress and, you know, see if you can get through some things this next week, and we'll be back next week for another session of Remote Ruby Therapy.
Yes. And I am going to find a Bath and Body Works and just get good smelling stuff. I think that's also what I need in my life. That's step six if you're keeping count. I need more smelly stuff.
Yeah. The wife buys plenty of that when it's on sale. So yeah.
Yes. Smart woman. You're lucky.
I dread those things because it's like, everything's on sale. We got to buy $200 worth of candles. And I'm like, for real?
Dude, the candles though.
They're awesome. Wake up.
Dude, I come out of my office and I'm like, it smells like pine in here and I love it.
Yeah, some good stuff, but we just got to make scratch and sniff for computers.
Still
need to do that.
I don't want to smell my computer. Like, scratch and sniff your code. I'm like, why does it smell like shit?
When we talk about code smells, we mean it now.
Dude, that's a product that, no one steals that.
Your VS Code plugin.
Yeah.
Like, why does this repo smell like farts again?
All right, dude. Have a good week.
Hey, you too, man. See ya.
Peace.